Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Francine Foss and Anish Chagpar. Dr. Foss is a professor of medical oncology and dermatology specializing in the treatment of lymphomas. Dr. Chagpar is associate professor of surgical oncology and director of the Breast Center at Smilow Cancer Hospital at Yale New Haven. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This week, Dr. Chagpar is joined by Dr. Jennifer Capo and Leslie Blatt for a conversation about palliative care versus hospice care. Dr. Capo is Associate Professor of Medicine, Medical Oncology, and Chief of Palliative Medicine, and Leslie is APRN for the Palliative Care Service, all at Smilow Cancer Hospital. Here's Anish Chagpar.
Why don't we start off with each of you telling us a little bit about what you do? So, Jennifer, why don't you start?
Thank you. So I'm trained in both geriatric medicine and in palliative care, and I'm the chief of the palliative care service at Yale New Haven Health Center. And there I direct the interdisciplinary team and take care of patients who are cared for by our service.
Okay, and Leslie?
So my background is a little bit different. I have a background in adult mental health and palliative care, and part of my role is kind of helping not only take care of patients and their families, but kind of educating the staff, be it nursing, medical students, residents.
Okay. So let's start off by really defining terms, because I think that there's a lot of misperceptions about what exactly palliative care is. So, Dr. Capo, what is palliative care?
So I'd like to use a definition that was developed by the Center for the Advancement of Palliative Care, which is called CAPSI. And I'm going to use language specifically from this definition because I think it captures so beautifully what palliative care truly is. So it's specialized medical care for people with serious illness. And this type of care is focused on providing patients with relief from pain and other symptoms. And it's for whatever diagnosis, so not just for patients with cancer. We see patients with other end organ diseases such as end-stage lung disease, end-stage liver disease, end-stage renal disease. And the goal of the care is to provide improved quality of life. And it's for both the patient and the family. So when we take care of patients, we recognize that their suffering, their illness affects not only themselves, but the people who love them and care for them. And it's provided by a team of doctors, nurses, chaplains, and social workers. And we're very fortunate at Yale New Haven Hospital to have a full interdisciplinary team to address suffering of many types, not just physical, but psychological, social, and spiritual. And it's care that we provide along with the care that's provided by primary teams or primary subspecialists. So we provide an extra layer of support for patients and their families. We're not separate. We're not care that comes in after there is, quote, nothing to be done, end quote. We provide integrated care throughout the course of a serious illness. And it can be provided for patients at any age and at any stage of a serious illness, even those who are still seeking curative treatment.
So Leslie, tell me a bit more about this team. It sounds like the palliative care team has a whole interdisciplinary unit, and then it's integrated into the larger team that's taking care of the patient. How does that work exactly?
So that's actually correct. And I think that Jen said it really well, is that we're a supportive service. So what we all bring is a little bit different perspective to the care of the patient and their family, and that oftentimes we're actually lucky we have a full complement team of a social worker, a chaplain, as well as medical staff to kind of help meet the needs of the patient and the family. Oftentimes, I think we may get called in for symptom management, but we find out that it's so much more than that. We find out that it's the patient and their family are struggling with financial aspects, which then leads to kind of other issues that they're struggling with, as well as oftentimes existential issues that need to be discussed or explored a little bit. And I think that our team is unique in the fact that we all have a little bit different strengths. And we know who to call to be able to help the patient and the family. So it may not always be myself that would be doing this. I might want to call my colleague, the social worker, to come and help me with this family, or the chaplain.
So, Jennifer, you know, I think one of the things that people often struggle with, and it's something that you alluded to, is the difference between palliative care and hospice or end-of-life care. Mm-hmm. Can you kind of help us to understand what the differences are?
Yes, of course. So really the definition of palliative care has been evolving over the last 10 to 15 years. In the past, people received palliative care in the form of hospice care, which is care that's provided at the very end of life when patients and families are no longer seeking curative or disease-remissive therapies. We like to think of palliative care as being integrated throughout the course of a disease, and the stage of the disease determines the degree and type of palliative care intervention that one would require. So, for example, at the early stages of a cancer diagnosis, palliative care interventions would include things like dealing with anticipatory grieving, symptom management, helping families plan for the future. Then as disease progresses, we're there to help with more serious symptoms, to help with end-of-life suffering, and also to help with families making difficult decisions. And it's helpful for us to be involved throughout the course of the illness because we build trust and relationships with patients and their families and allows us to help them struggle with these decisions that need to be made as diseases progress.
So, Leslie, do you find that, you know, when you're consulted early on in disease management, say for symptoms or for anticipatory grieving, that kind of thing, that patients and their families may be a little bit resistant, like, wait a second, am I dying here?
So I think that that's often what happens, where people are confused about why we get called in. And I think our usual response is that we're just an added layer of support and that we have expertise, particularly in pain and symptom management, as well as kind of helping with discussions that occur all the time. I think one of the things that we can do is kind of help clarify the medical information, because in any big medical center, there are numerous consultants that kind of come and give information, and that one of our roles is to kind of help the family tease out what everybody is saying, and I think that's an important piece. I think the other piece that we say is that once you get to know us, you love us, because we kind of stick with somebody wherever they go, and that means whatever floor they're on, whenever they come back into the hospital, and we actually hope to see them when they're out of the hospital as well. So we follow them through the continuum of their illness wherever they are.
So maybe you can speak to that, Jen. I mean, is palliative care both an inpatient service and an outpatient service? Is this something that's available in the community or only at large academic centers? How does that work?
So at Yale New Haven Hospital, our goal is to follow patients, as Leslie mentioned, throughout the continuum of their disease. So that includes both outpatient and inpatient practices. So we have an outpatient clinic that meets twice a week, but we also see patients with their subspecialists when they come to their appointments as outpatients. So a wonderful opportunity is to be able to see a patient with their oncologist, for example, to say that we're here to support you, we're here to address your symptoms, and we're also here just to talk about what has this experience been like for you, what are your concerns, what are your worries, and what are your hopes, what is making you happy. So really providing that supportive counseling. And we keep repeating this phrase, extra layer support, because it's really, again, this in parallel with, integrated with, not instead of treatment for patients. And then our same core team follows those patients when they get admitted, when they're admitted to the hospital. So if someone has a need to come in for symptom control or for any reason, we'll see them when they come to the hospital, hopefully within 24 hours of their admission. So I've heard patients refer to Leslie Blatt, Ursula Nert, Christina Monaco, our physicians and advanced practice nurses, as the friendliest faces that they see during their hospitalization, because they have trust relationships with them. They feel they're supported, and they feel that they will get the answers they need when they have questions that may not be answered by everyone on the team.
So, Leslie, if this palliative care service is really that extra layer of support, should every cancer patient have a palliative care consult, or is it just certain ones, or is it ones that are more advanced, or ones where there may be issues with pain control? How should that work?
So that's actually a great question. And I actually think that everybody should have palliative care support, but not necessarily from the palliative care team. That I think that there are certain skills that all physicians and practitioners should have, and that perhaps our role might be best utilized with people that have, that we know have serious illnesses, that maybe have a metastatic cancer, that may have the beginning of a illness that may be terminal, or for the families that are having really difficulty coping with it. So the earlier the better. Yes, everybody should have palliative care, but I'd be worried that we wouldn't be able to provide what we do so well to everybody.
So I just want to add on to that, that one of the missions of our service is to provide education to primary providers of all sorts so that they can provide this basic palliative care to all their patients. So basic symptom assessment and management, basic supportive counseling. And then I think about our care as specialized palliative care or tertiary palliative care. So when there are complex pain issues, when there are complex issues with coping, or I ask providers to consider the question, you know, is my patient suffering in a way that I can't address? And if that suffering exists, whether it be physical, psychological, social, or spiritual, that's a patient that may benefit from our involvement.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I think is so compelling about the palliative care service is, as you mentioned, this integration of all different kinds of suffering. So often we think about palliative care as being pain and symptom management. But Leslie, maybe you could talk a little bit about the other aspects of suffering that, that palliative care really addresses. And you've touched on some of them, but tell us a bit more about how that works.
So I think with any serious illness, people have often undergo role changes or anticipatory grieving that may lead to a lot of psychological symptoms of depression, anxiety, that need to be treated, that people often have questions about, why did this happen to me? Why is it, what did I do in my life? Is this a punishment from God? And again, I think that as you hear these questions, you can see that certain members of our team might be better able to answer or help people find the answers to those questions. I think what our whole team does is listen really well to whatever the patient is or their family is talking about, and then can bring in the resources that they need.
Yeah. And Jennifer, I think that, you know, to Leslie's point, that this really is a package deal with the patient and their family. You might want to tell us a little bit more about the support that you provide the caregiver, because I can imagine that this is a harrowing experience for patients, mm-hmm. but it is also a harrowing experience for everyone who is a caregiver or a loved one of these patients who may not have the resources and the background and the ability to really know how to support these patients to the optimum.
And we recognize that, again, suffering from serious illnesses extends to families and loved ones, and we really try to assess that suffering and to determine what would be most helpful to that family. And so supportive counseling is provided to the loved ones. So when we enter our hospital room and the daughter who is always there with their mother who's sick, we want to spend some time asking them, you know, what has this experience been like for you? How has this affected you? You know, what are your hopes and fears about this illness? We think about practical support at home, because you're right. You know, people are sent home from the hospital to their caregivers who are loved ones who may not have had any training in how best to care for a very ill person. And so our social worker and Leslie and the other advanced practice nurse and physician assistants are able to assess, you know, what are the practical skills and knowledge and just practical equipment and other support that are needed at home. And then we've begun to think of more about bereavement and the importance of following patients, families, and loved ones after one dies in the hospital. And so there's a large initiative that over the next 1 to 2 years we'll be developing a comprehensive bereavement program as part of the palliative care service as well.
Okay. Well, you know, this has been such an interesting conversation, and we're going to pick right back up there after we take a short break for a medical minute. So please stay tuned to learn more information about palliative care and hospice care with our guests, Dr. Jennifer Capo and Leslie Blatt.
Breast cancer is the most common cancer in women. In Connecticut alone, approximately 3,000 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer this year. But there is new hope. earlier detection, non-invasive treatments, and novel therapies provide more options for patients to fight breast cancer. Women should schedule a baseline mammogram beginning at age 40 or earlier if they have risk factors associated with the disease. With screening, early detection, and a healthy lifestyle, breast cancer can be defeated. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, such as Yale Cancer Center, to make innovative new treatments available to patients. A potential breakthrough in treating chemotherapy-resistant breast cancer is now being studied at Yale, combining BSI-101, a PARP inhibitor, with the chemotherapy drug irinotecan. This has been a Medical Minute, brought to you as a public service by the Yale Cancer Center. More information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to WNPR, Connecticut's public radio station.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Anish Chagpar, and I'm joined today by my guests, Dr. Jennifer Capo and Leslie Blatt. We're discussing palliative care and really how this field has become something that a lot of people really didn't have a good sense of, that it is far more than end-of-life care in hospice, but really extends to an extra layer of support, symptom management, both mind, body, soul, the whole works. So Jen, maybe tell us the genesis of this change in palliative care, how people have changed perceptions of what palliative care is over the last, say, 5 to 10 years, and then really where you feel the field is going.
Mm-hmm. So I think over the last 5 years, palliative care physicians and teams have recognized that focusing just on end-of-life care had been a barrier to engaging the teams and the services that could be provided by this interdisciplinary team that's specially trained to address all sources of suffering. And so there was a movement, again, as this disease, as this definition evolves, to define the care as being integrated throughout the course of a serious illness. Centers like the Center for the Advancement of Palliative Care, which is identified by the acronym CAPSI, has been a huge supporter of this change. So CAPSI's main mission is to help medical centers integrate palliative care throughout their health systems. And they've been very paramount in helping redefine palliative care as a field over the past 5 to 10 years.
So, Leslie, you know, as we think about palliative care being this integrated extra layer of support alongside acute care teams, you know, one of the things that became very clear as we were talking before the break was this whole idea of support, not just pain and symptom management, but other layers and this team approach. Do you want to talk a little bit about all of the members of the team and what exactly their role is? I mean, I think we can kind of understand the role of a physician and a nurse and a social worker, but maybe the role of a chaplain might be something that you can talk about.
So I hope I do this justice. And I think the role of the chaplain is really so important on a palliative care team. And the reason for that is that there's lots of research that shows that how people make decisions about what they do and what treatments they want is often not always based on kind of the facts. It's often based on their faith or their spiritual beliefs regarding life, and that the chaplains, and we're lucky to have chaplains at Yale New Haven Hospital that really are non-denominational, so that the chaplain has experience in many different religions, but doesn't bring to the bedside their own religion, and can kind of help the patient, no matter what type of religion they have, to kind of answer some of those questions that are very common when a critical illness strikes, which is, why is this happening to me? What did I do? Is this a punishment from God? Did I do something? And kind of help tease out how their faith plays a role in helping them cope with kind of what goes forward for them. They also have great ties to the community, so that if there's a particular religion that the patient is, they can reach out to the community. So, for instance, if somebody is Islam, they know a lot of imams. If the person's own imam is not readily available to come into the hospital, so they not only are they able to do it, but they have a huge community support.
So it sounds like, you know, this is really an integrated service that, that embodies mind, body, and soul, really. And Jen, maybe you can tell us a little bit about how one trains to be a palliative care physician, because you can imagine, I mean, when you think about chaplains having, as Leslie mentioned, this experience in all of these religions, what is the training for a palliative care physician like?
So palliative care physicians are fellowship trained. So just like a cardiologist has specialty training in heart disease, palliative care physicians are specially trained in palliative medicine. It's a one-year clinical fellowship, and we're very pleased that we will have a one-year palliative medicine fellowship training program starting in July of 2014, where we'll train up to two fellows a year to become specialists in this field. And it's an intensive one-year clinical fellowship where fellows spend time taking care of patients alongside the team with adequate oversight by an attending physician. And during this year, they spend time in the hospital, in the outpatient clinic, and at hospice to learn about all the tools that they'll need to take care of these patients. They observe with the chaplain, the social worker, and the nurses to really understand the full array of treatments and counseling that we can provide for our patients.
And do they get specialty training in all of the pain and symptom management more than you would, say, just,
absolutely,
you know, with a medicine residency?
It, absolutely. It's an intensive one-year fellowship that focuses on a clear focus on symptom management, but also about these other fields, too, to really understand what are the tools that are available on an interdisciplinary team and how best to work with each other. You know, this is a very collaborative process. We meet every morning as a team to discuss our patients. And so I've learned a lot about spirituality and about the role of a chaplain. I've learned a lot about the role of a social worker. I've learned about the special skills about nursing in general, but also about the specific skills and knowledge that are held by their team members. And so it's really a collaborative process that's taught to the fellows who may not have learned this model of care during their previous training.
Yeah.
If I could just add one other thing to that is that in many hospitals, there's a hierarchy of kind of who's in charge. And I think on the palliative care team, each discipline is recognized for their unique contribution that they bring to the team. And so that nobody has more say than another member. So that the say of the social worker or chaplain is equally as important as the say of the doctor regarding the patient and their family. And I think that's unique to palliative care.
It's truly collaborative.
You know, the other thing that I think is unique to palliative medicine is how intense that treatment is and the intensity of the relationship that you have with your patient. I mean, just listening to you talk about, you know, developing relationships with patients and their families early on and building that through a relationship of trust through their care right until the end of life is incredibly strong and incredibly intense. Tell me about how that feels as a palliative care physician.
So I can tell you that it's been incredibly rewarding. So I've been in the field for 12 years now, and it's been incredibly rewarding to get to know patients and their families and to have the honor of caring for them. And so it brings me tremendous joy. But it is a challenge to see suffering and to witness suffering. And so as a team, we talk about self-care and the importance of practicing clear self-care and the importance about talking about difficult cases and when we're feeling sad or when we're feeling burnt out. And it's been a particular focus of our team meetings to make sure that we address these concerns. Our chaplain, our social worker, the nurses, and I, we all come together and think about how best to address self-care, how best to prevent compassion fatigue and burnout. And those are clear risks for persons in this field, but we need to address it proactively and think about it as a team, how best we can support each other so we can then support patients and their families to the best of our abilities.
Yeah. I mean, I think, Leslie, you know, as an APRN in palliative care, that must be a tremendous challenge in terms of dealing with compassion fatigue and so much of yourself that you give to your patients. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, so that's another good question. So, you know, I have a practice where I meditate every day, and I have And I journal as a way to allow me to kind of let go of some of those intense feelings that I may have. I need time for myself to be by myself in order to be able to rejuvenate. And it's, I think, the difficulty is carving out that time to know what you need in order to be able to do all the things that you want to do. That's what I try to do. Exercise is huge for me to help my mental health. And so I make sure that I exercise pretty much every day. I mean, those are the things that I do. I know each member of our team does something a little bit differently. And I think that we all look out for one another when we see signs of one of the other team members kind of looking a little frayed or looking a little, we get worried about them. We'll ask, how are things going? What can we do? Do we need to give you a little bit of a break? Do you need a lighter assignment? So not only do you have to do it internally, but I think us as a team, as Jen was saying, needs to look out for each other as well.
And I just wanted to add to that, that we also see that an important role that we have in the hospital is to make sure that other staff members have the same support that we're creating in our own team. So the nurses, the bedside nurses on the oncology unit, for example, care deeply for their patients and see tremendous amount of suffering themselves. Our chaplain has created programs to help support those nurses, and that we hope to spread throughout the hospital, recognizing that it's hard to care for patients who are suffering. It can be tremendously rewarding, but there's a cost to it as well.
Yeah. You know, and I, as you're talking, I'm thinking about, you know, the caregivers of these patients who care so deeply about their loved ones. And, you know, they may not have a team necessarily that can offload. What advice do you give to caregivers in order to care for themselves?
I think the best thing people can do is take little breaks for themselves. So try to encourage them that they don't have to be there at the bedside 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And that may be a struggle for a lot of people. And so then it's even a little bit smaller than that. How can you feel comfortable going down to the cafeteria to get some food? Would you feel comfortable walking around the block? Because really just going outside and feeling the sun on your face on a beautiful day, it can do an amazing thing for rejuvenation. So we kind of ask them what would help them, because people know themselves what would help them. And then just encourage them to do that, to say it's okay to leave for a little bit.
We also stress that if you don't take care of yourself, you're not going to be able to sustain this and be able to be there if your loved one needed more help in the future. So it's important not only to maintain it for yourself, but also to be there so you don't burn out yourself.
Yeah. I imagine that this must be particularly difficult in patients who are in critical care situations. Can you talk a little bit about how you address people who may be in, you know, ICU units and so on?
Yeah, we're working hard to develop a comprehensive plan for the patients in our ICU at Yale New Haven Hospital. It started by surveying nurses and doctors who provide primary care for patients in the ICU. You know, what is your experience with providing support, symptom management, addressing spiritual concerns, providing supportive counseling? And what we found was, although many of the doctors and nurses felt comfortable, they still felt that they needed more help and more training in many of these issues. So we've taken that information and we're going to create an educational series and then think about more how can the palliative care team be more available to the ICU teams. And that would involve rounding at least weekly with the team and seeing all the patients and hearing about all the cases, and really just helping identify what patients might benefit from a palliative care consult early. So again, it doesn't have to be the patients who are struggling with the decision to withdraw care at the end of life. It's patients who are suffering in the ICU. It's patients who will likely survive but need to get over this challenge of an ICU admission and the fear and physical pain that can accompany that.
Dr. Jennifer Capo is Associate Professor of Medicine, Medical Oncology, and Chief of Palliative Medicine, and Leslie Blatt is APRN for the Palliative Care Service at Smilo Cancer Hospital. If you have questions or would like to add your comments, visit yalecancercenter.org, where you can also get the podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.